This week on Grape Encounters Radio.
I was just wondering whether the other teens, as you were growing up, were jealous when you uncorked a Cabernet in the cafeteria.
Yeah, no, I would usually hide it in a on water bottle or something. You know, they thought I was drinking Welch's. You know, they didn't know I was drinking classified Bordeaux.
Warning, the following program is serious about wine, but doesn't take wine too seriously. It may make you laugh, or thirsty, or both. And we're sorry if it makes you spit. This is Grape Encounters Radio with David Wilson.
Peel me a grape, crush me some ice, skin me a peach, save the fuzz for my pillow.
Have we got a bunch of Grape Encounters for you today? We are going to have on, in just a little bit, a star of both the wine world and the motion picture world. If you're a wine lover, you already know him as probably the most high-profile wine expert in the world right now. But before we get into that, we've been doing the news at the end of the show, and I thought it might be nice to start the show with what's going on in the world of wine. Our senior wine correspondent, Larry Gibbard, is here and ready to lay the wine news on us. What do you got?
Are you ready?
I'm always ready.
Okay. Wine Enthusiast is named the wine region of 2014.
Already?
Yes. It's not Champagne in France.
Do you know that where you're sitting right now was the wine region of 2013?
2013, really?
Yes.
No way.
Yes.
I'm excited.
So I want to know.
It's not Italy. It's not Sonoma County, California. It is...
Wait, don't say, because I really don't know.
It is...
I'll bet it's in the U.S. I'll bet it is.
It is in the U.S.
Really?
Yes.
2 years in a row.
Can you believe that?
Gotta be someplace in New York. Here's what I'm going to say. I'm going to say the Finger Lakes of New York.
You're kind of right.
I'm kind of right.
Kind of right. So it's the entire state of New York.
That's not a wine region. They have a bunch of wine regions
there. They have a bunch
of
wine regions, but they're giving it to the whole state. Magazine says it's for the tremendous growth and improved business climate in New York. Plus, they have one of the most vibrant and promising wine regions in the world. But again, it's multiple regions. I don't know that you can classify the entire state as one region.
Well, we got it just being one region. We didn't have to combine the assets of all of our regions to be wine region of the year.
That's right. But good to New York.
All right. You know, good for them, because I've been telling people New York is coming on strong. New York wines really deserve a lot of attention. They're working hard there. They're very aggressive. And I've tasted some pretty tasty New York wines.
Well, when you taste those pretty tasty New York wines,
yes,
do you know that it's worth a good hour's worth of exercise? Canadian researchers at the University of Alberta now claim a glass of red wine has the same benefit as an hour worth of exercise.
Oh my gosh, do you realize that yesterday I exercised for like 12 hours? And this is the truth too. My wife and I were going to go spend the day walking, you know, on the beach or going for a hike or something like that. And we ended up going to this really obscure little winery out in the middle of nowhere. We drank wine all day long with the owners. And we had 12 hours of exercise.
Yeah. Credit resveratrol.
It's resveratrol. Everybody wants to say resveratrol.
It's not resveratrol.
It's resveratrol. Yeah.
Resveratrol. It sounds like an incantation from Harry Potter. Resveratrol!
Okay, move on.
It's an antioxidant found in red grapes that improves muscle and heart function the same way a trip to the gym does. So that's pretty cool.
And they're saying you get enough resveratrol in a glass of red wine.
One glass, 1 hour's worth of exercise.
Really?
According to the University of Alberta.
You know what? I think I'm going to start drinking wine all day long.
How's that different?
Then what? No, I don't drink while I'm working. I don't. I will taste on the radio sometimes, but you know.
Yeah, okay. In Seattle, residents have a new service they can use called Drizzly. It's the Uber for alcohol.
Oh, I thought Drizzly was just describing the weather there.
Well, it does do that.
You've lived there, right?
I have, yes.
Yeah, big radio guy there. You were.
I was.
Okay, but now you're here with us.
GeekWire.com tried this service out. There's a minimum $20 order. You can get beer, wine, booze, or soft drinks. They deliver it straight to your front door or to your office or wherever you want the alcohol. There's a markup.
How about your dorm room?
Not your dorm room. They won't deliver to college campuses.
What if you're of age?
Doesn't matter.
What if you stand right outside the college on a street corner?
I don't think they deliver to street corner. Although there may be a good business in that.
There could be.
And you can use an app to track your delivery and track your driver and rate them and all that good stuff. It seems like a really smart service to me. They've had alcohol delivery in Washington State for a couple of years now.
Why don't other states have this?
It's against the law to deliver wine for whatever or alcohol for whatever reason.
All right. Okay.
Wine labels are a leading determinant in which a woman might choose a wine. This according to a new survey by Marks & Spencer, a multinational retailer based in Britain.
I'm standing up for the women right now.
I am woman.
Okay.
Because I am around a tremendous number of wine-savvy people, men and women.
Sure.
And I know that the lion's share of those women that I know who are wine lovers choose their wine in a very methodical way.
Okay. Well, this company talked to more than 1,300 women.
They're British women.
Well, listen to me. I'm not claiming this is all women. I'm saying this is a British study. 42% were swayed by a catchy or attractive label.
But shouldn't we be pounding these people? Seriously?
No.
No, we should be going...
I choose wines by the label. You do too.
I do just to make fun of them. I've got a label, actually, right out the studio door. I'm going to show it to you, okay?
Well...
You keep talking. Just go ahead.
They didn't mention how many men because they didn't survey men. They only surveyed women because in the UK, 80% of wine is purchased by women. This number may be more by men because men are so impatient and they don't even like to do research. They're like, yeah, this bottle looks good. It might be 60% for men.
I'm glad we have speakers out in the hallway so I could hear what you were saying.
What'd you get there?
I brought a bottle that I bought strictly for the label. I have no idea how
good
the wine is.
Are
you ready?
Yeah. Wow.
Can you see what it says?
Yeah.
I don't know if we can say that on the air.
No, I don't think you should, but it spells a naughty word.
It's about a woman named Kay, and apparently she's lost. So they are...
looking for her.
They're looking for her. Yeah. I'm not saying any more than that.
Maybe we can put it
on
the...
But that label was so funny.
You can put a picture of that on the Facebook page.
Look what I had to pay for that, $29.
Wow.
Yeah.
And so you bought that because of the label.
I did. I thought it was clever.
Very good.
I thought I was actually going to be able to talk about it on the radio, and then I thought better about it. But yeah, sometimes I think people will buy certain wines that have certain labels, like, you know, Mad Housewife. You know, some guy who's trying to make up with his significant other brings home the Mad Housewife wine and a big bouquet of flowers.
I'll buy a bottle of wine based on the description on the back.
That's different. I think you're talking...
No, clever story.
But this is really talking about,
I think, the aesthetics of the label.
Yeah, exactly.
You're saying this is a negative.
Huh?
I'm not saying this is a negative.
All right.
Why are you saying negative?
I think they should not be allowed to put cute pictures or names on bottles.
Ever watch the TV show Scandal?
I was just making that up.
I know.
Scandal, no.
No. It's a very popular show, David. You should check it out. Olivia Pope is the main character. She drinks a lot of red wine. And recently, New York Times wine critic Andrew Osimoff turned his sharp eye towards the fictional character, complaining she's drinking her wine the wrong way.
Wrong side of the glass?
The problem is...
She got a straw in the glass?
She treats the wine as if it were a can of beer, grabbing the goblets by the bulb rather than the stem, guzzling rather than sipping, never swirls, never sniffs. Is there such a thing as drinking wine the wrong way, David?
There is a single mantra that we have had since day one on Grape Encounters Radio. It goes like this. It's your wine. You paid for it. You can do whatever you want with it. And don't let anybody tell you that you can't.
Mm-hmm. Let's get this out.
Who do you think makes more money, her or him?
Oh, she does.
Yeah. Is she attractive?
You need to see the show.
I'm just asking.
I think she's attractive.
Okay.
What's it matter?
Well, I just wondered.
Why?
I just wondered. Like, take you, for instance. You're devilishly handsome.
I am.
You can get away with so many things that other men who are not the physical specimen that you are, they can't get away with it. You can get away with drinking your wine in an improper fashion.
And I do.
And you did the last time we went to dinner.
I don't sniff. I don't swirl. I don't sip. I guzzle. I grab it by the bulb instead of the stem. I'm a horrible wine drinker, David.
Okay. All right. So can we get her on the show and just have a conversation about how she feels about Mr. Asimov giving her such a hard time?
Well, let's do it.
Or should we get him on the show? What if we get them both on the show?
Surprise them.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'll work on that.
That could be a catfight.
And we finish with a word to the wise, David.
What would that be?
Know what you are ordering. Joe Lentini was dining at Bobby Flay Steakhouse in Atlantic City. Now, he's not a big drinker, but he...
Bobby Flay?
No, this guy,
okay.
Joe Lentini. He's not a big drinker, but he and two others on the party of 10 wanted wine with dinner. So he asked the waitress how much a particular bottle of wine was on the list because he didn't have his glasses and he couldn't read it. And she said, $37.50. Everyone agreed that was a fair price and the order was placed.
For a good bottle of wine?
Yeah, it was a decent bottle of wine.
$37.50, that's good.
A few minutes later, while they were chatting, the sommelier arrived with a cork bottle and presented it. Lentini said the wine was okay. It was good. It wasn't great. It wasn't terrible. It was fine. The bill arrived. The meal was $4,700.
What?
The wine bottle was a 2011 Screaming Eagle Oakville.
Oh, my gosh. And the server said
$3,750.
$3,750. Now, I presume they gave it to them for $3,750.
No, no, no. They called the manager out and they sided with the waitress and the sommelier, but they did give him a reduced price of $2,200.
Well, was the price in the menu? Was it listed in the menu with the price? Could they have seen it readily?
They could have seen it, but he didn't have his glasses. So he asked her what the price was.
Oh. So when he said, what's a good bottle of wine? And she went straight to the top, $37.50.
I suppose people order it, it wouldn't be on the menu, but come on, really? Most waitresses, when you say, I'm looking for a good bottle of wine, they're like, well, what's your price range?
Exactly. I always tell them
$37.50.
Okay, so coming up next, it's somebody who definitely knows what he's ordering. He was the star of the movie Somme in Kabul, was a central figure in the movie. They call him the star of the movie. He didn't pass the test the first time. The other guys did. He didn't, but he went back and he fought and passed it the second time around. And now he's pretty much the most high-profile Somme anywhere. And he's going to be here with us by phone on Grape Encounters next. And you're going to get the inside skinny on Somme, the unsomme story. You're going to hear things you have not heard before. That's what we're all about right here on Grape Encounters Radio.
When life gives you lemons, you sell them for wine.
Give me that wine.
Like certain wines, he's syrupy, sweet, and has long legs. Here's David Wilson.
And we are back with Grape Encounters Radio, and I finally get to talk to somebody I've been wanting to talk to for a very long time. It's Ian Cobble. He was the star of the movie Somme, and if you haven't seen the movie Somme, I checked as early as this morning. It's available on Netflix. If you're a wine lover, watch that movie. Just have fun with it, because I think a lot of people took it a little too serious and got a little hypercritical. But the truth of the matter is that it's had a big influence in the wine world, not just on wine snobs, but everyday wine drinkers. And Ian, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Great to be here.
First off, I read some reviews and things people had said about the movie, and they were a little hard on the movie. And I personally was just completely captivated from beginning to end. What are your feelings about it? Just stepping back and looking at the entire piece from a critical perspective, what do you feel?
Well, the people that were hypercritical of the movie are already typically critics themselves. That's their job, to be critical. And I think for the common, you know, consumer to watch the adventure we went through, and it's a very difficult time in all of our lives to pass an exam that only about 200 people in the world had ever passed before since 1969. So the way it was edited and everything like that, I think they did a good job. They definitely took, you know, the most serious and intense 3% of my personality and distilled it down from that. But it was a difficult thing to be taking an exam, which is already very intimidating, and have somebody filming the process and then editing and pretty much showing the most intense part of that 3 years. So they're not showing anything that was relaxed. They're showing the most hardcore and stressful times of our lives, which makes interesting TV. But it is an interesting movie. I don't personally like watching it so much because it's my life and my most intense moments on screen. So that's always a strange thing to watch in a movie theater with a group of people. I don't know how many people get to experience that, but it was pretty strange. But, you know, it's had a lot of positive response, and,
I
get stopped quite a bit on the street in different areas of the world, and people are super excited that they got to go through that experience with us. So it's a great movie that for most people, and I've only seen it about 3 or 4 times, and I think, every few years I'll probably go back to it and check it out, but it's enough for me.
See how much you've grown since that movie.
Yeah, exactly. I don't really think it reflects who I am. It just shows who I was during stressful times. So a lot of people meet me in real life and see how relaxed I am.
That's totally fair enough, I would say. And you make a really good point that there were cameras and probably audio people there and all sorts of people in the room. You weren't just there by yourself. And that had to put a lot of stress on the process of trying to study for the exam.
It did, you know, but they weren't there all the time. They filmed it over 3 years. But, you know, most of it that you see in the movie was filmed over about a 2-week period before the second attempt at the exam. And that's just when a lot of things came together in the right way. And luckily for the director and the producer, there was a lot of good material to be filmed and a lot of good synergies between us and, you know, interesting, stressful situations, which you'll have to watch the movie to experience. But, you know, at the end of it, I think it kind of captured the stress that everybody goes through. And you know, to this day, only about, you know, 3 to 7% of all the people who attempt the exam pass it.
Yeah,
so,
amazing.
That the fact that they followed 5 of us and 4 of us ended up passing, not to spoil the finale, but it's pretty rare that that would happen. So,
and you know, what's interesting about the movie is that I think it really underscores just how much there is that you can know if you want to know about wine, and how most of us just really scratch the surface. And if you want to go deep, you can go deep to an infinite degree, I would say.
You can. You know, there's 3 basic parts of the exam. There's service, there's blind tasting, and then there's theory. At the master's level, there's no pens, there's no paper. It's all verbal, and it's all actions, basically. So most of the scenes that are interesting are with the blind tasting. And I think, you know, when you can take a glass of wine and figure out where it's from in the world, what vintage, what grape varietal, what soil type, I think a lot of people are blown away by that. And it is an art that can be learned. A lot of people do ask, you know, how do you have that natural ability? And I think it's kind of like, you know, seeing. If you have 20/20 vision, it doesn't mean that you know everything about the Mona Lisa when you go into the Louvre, right? You have to learn about what you're actually looking at. You have to learn about what you're smelling, how that translates into a place, how aromatics translate into varietal characteristic. And there's certain clues that actually will help all of us get better at blind tasting. So it's not something that we just were born into. It's a learned skill. You do have a basic sense of, you know, taste and smell and taste memory. Those have to be on to be able to become a good blind taster. But it's not something that, you know, we were just born and becoming experts at blind tasting. It does take a lot of work. And I think that's one of the parts of the movie that blows people away is the blind tasting aspect.
I'm talking to Ian Cobble. He is the star of Somme. And if you haven't seen the movie, definitely check it out. If you're a wine lover, it is a must see because you will learn so much from watching that movie. One of the things that I learned, Ian, was that you started drinking wine and identifying wine characteristics as a kid. How old was that?
Yeah, you know, I started when I was 5, 6, 7 years old. My dad would just give me wines and have me smell it and taste it. And, you know, I wasn't necessarily even thinking about what I was doing. You know, my dad would, you know, let me taste cigars or a good beer or something like that. I don't even remember it. I didn't even know that footage had been taken until I was sitting in the movie theater watching it. My dad gave it to the director without even asking me.
Just wondering whether the other teens, as you were growing up, were jealous when you uncorked a Cabernet in the cafeteria.
Yeah, no, I would usually hide it in a water bottle or something. You know, they thought I was drinking Welch's. You know, they didn't know I was drinking classified Bordeaux.
Right? Was there any fear in your family that your parents would be arrested for serving a minor?
No. They have a very European view of life. I mean, if you're in Europe, you grow up in France, you're getting wine at the dinner table watered down. You know, alcohol was never something that my parents, you know, made me afraid of or, you know, even, in, you know, wanted me to drink. It was just a part of our daily life, and they had me taste it. And I think that's why you don't run away from home looking to go, you know, drink a bunch of vodka when you get to college, because, you know, I don't look at it as something you have to go out and have. It's always been a part of our life, and I think that's the better way of looking at it.
So. Amen to that, I'll tell you. And I think even more so today, kids are not running off and sneaking booze like they used to. You know, when I was a kid, it was like scoring something from mom and dad's liquor cabinet was a pretty big deal.
I still did do that. I did take, you know, bottles from them. I'm just kidding.
All right. We're talking to Ian Cobble. He is a master somme. There are only, 135, I think.
There's 135 Americans, and there's, I think, 216 in the world now that have passed since 1969.
Go America. All right, we're going to be back with Ian in just a second. Don't go anyplace. We're also going to talk to Ian about what he's doing now after the fame that came from the movie Somme. Stay with us. You're listening to Grape Encounters Radio.
Give me that wine. Give me that wine. Give me that wine. Because I can't cut loose without my juice.
I don't get much loose with that.
This is David Wilson, and I want you to sail with me from Rome to Barcelona on one of the most luxurious cruise ships in the world, the completely reimagined Regent Seven Seas Mariner. Every year, I take listeners on a luxury voyage sure to create unforgettable memories. And next May, from the 10th to the 17th, our itinerary will include some of my favorite places on the planet. And I'll be there to make sure that your travel experience is purely amazing. Imagine visiting incomparable Rome, Florence, Portofino, Provence, and breathtaking Barcelona. The ports will be spectacular, and your elegant suite with a private patio will astound you. Book now and get 2-for-1 fares, free round-trip air, $200 shipboard credit, plus you pay nothing extra for wine, cocktails, shore excursions, even tips are included. For more information, click the link at grapeencounters.com. I've got a luxury cabin with your name on it. Click on the link now at grapeencounters.com.
If you'd like to hear more no-nonsense talk about wine and all the fun that goes with it, check out winetalkshow.com. At winetalkshow.com, you'll find a massive library of content for fun-loving, unpretentious people who aren't afraid to step outside the lines and challenge conventional wisdom. We'll take you places you've never been before. That's a promise. Expand your wine horizons in unimaginable ways at winetalkshow.com.
Nestled between world-class Paso Robles and San Luis Obispo wine countries, the warm and inviting city of Atascadero is the humble heart of the Central Coast. With access to endless wine country adventures, including wine and olive oil tasting tours, artisan farm experiences, food, wine, and cultural events, historic Atascadero's cozy and oh-so-friendly atmosphere make it the perfect home base for Central Coast tourists. Discover more about the heart of the Central Coast at visitatascadero.com.
And now the man who once read about the evils of wine, so he gave up reading, David Wilson.
Old red wine, well past its prime, may have to finish it after crossing the line.
Rape Encounters Radio continues, and so privileged to have on the line Master Sommelier Ian Cobble, who you saw in the movie Somme, studying for the Master Somme exam. Only 135 have passed in the U.S. and only a couple hundred in the entire world. It's probably the hardest test that you can take. And a big focus is obviously on being able to identify characteristics in wine and then comparing them to things in the real world. How do you do that, Ian? Because before you can actually make those comparisons, you have to experience those things in the real world as well. Did you find yourself sniffing and or tasting everything inside, or were you just naturally tuned into these things?
I think it's really just about your taste and memory. It's, you know, every time if I, you know, ask you what actually an underripe green banana smells like, you can kind of think in your mind, okay, you've had an unripe banana before, and hopefully your taste and memory can actually allow you to smell that. If I say, you know, imagine biting into a lemon without peeling it, you can imagine that. There's flavors that you can imagine, and that's all a part of our taste memory over dozens of years of being alive. And every single time somebody's cooking, you know, a chicken stock, or somebody is cutting mushrooms, or if you're in a wet forest, I mean, there's all things that are actually programmed into your taste memory. So when you're blind tasting, you're smelling things, and the molecule in the actual wine hits your olfactory bulb, and memory should come up in your brain. There's so many aromas that we can describe, and that's kind of the art. So if you can take all of these descriptors, each wine in the world has classic descriptors. There's all sorts of things that come together to create unique characteristics of each specific wine, and that's the art of wine tasting.
How do you take inventory of those smells from the rest of the world that does not include wine and connect them to what you're tasting or smelling in the wine?
It's tough. There's the kit you can buy. It's called L'Anaise du Vin by Jean Lenoir. It's 54 aromas most commonly found in wine. You can train your nose. So, you know, number 32 might be cocoa powder. Number one might be lemon. Number two is grapefruit. So you can actually start by taking this vial and smelling it and being like, okay, what is that? And then you can look at the answer and connect your taste memory to that. Or even having a party where you have black glasses and you put the fruits in the glasses and you have 20 different smells, going down to even fresh rubber or freshly, you know, shaved pencil or something like that. But it's a difficult thing to explain to people if they haven't smelled that smell before. I had a friend at the French Laundry who, one time I missed a wine from Clare Valley in Australia. It was a Riesling. And he said, you smell like that fresh rubber, almost like a fresh tennis ball smell. I'm like, you know what, you're right. And as a tennis player, that resonated with me. And so I would actually use it on exams, and it was a fresh rubber or component, which actually you would get points for.
Let's talk blind tastings in the real world and people who are not interested in taking wine to the level that you've taken it to. I have made it a habit now that when I go to a dinner party or throw a dinner party, I cover up all the wines and then really get people to dig down deep and try to identify what they're tasting, what the variety is, all of these things that you do in the SOM exams. More people should be doing this, don't you think?
Yeah, you know, I think the most important thing is to find out what you like and not judge, you know, not saying, oh, I don't like Merlot, because it was talked about in Sideways and you shouldn't drink Merlot. People should actually taste wines, you know, in a blind setting to realize what they do and what they don't like. Some people say, oh, I hate French wines. But if you give them, you know, a glass of Chateau Neuf de Pape and you said you like this, oh my God, I love it. And you're like, oh, this is French, and they just can't believe it. But there's so many variations within each country of the world. There's so many complexities with wine. I think, you know, blind tasting allows you to take the label away, take the price away and say, okay, do I like it? And it could be an $8 bottle of, you know, Argentine Malbec. And it could be that you love, and there could be an $800 bottle of young Bordeaux that you don't like. And it doesn't mean that you're wrong, you're right. It's simply your taste buds. There's so many things that you kind of change in your mind already by knowing what you're drinking. And I think blind tasting separates that and allows you really to develop your taste and what you like without prejudging the wine.
You make a number of really good points. And I think prejudices that we deal with wine, varietal, where it came from, and the price. I think the price will prejudice us and maybe even cause us to try very hard to like a wine that we wouldn't naturally like. And same thing with the varietal. I think sometimes we just assume that we know the difference between a Zin and a Cab and whatever else. And it's not as easy as you think it is when you taste it blind. And I'm probably asking the question of the wrong person because it's easier for you. But for the lay person who just enjoys wine.
It's not always easy.
Really?
Sure.
Have you got varietals wrong?
Yeah, of course. I miss wines. It depends on when they harvest the wine. Take an example for like Cabernet Sauvignon from Napa. If you harvest when they used to harvest with a potential alcohol of, you know, 12.8 or 13.4% alcohol during the 70s or 80s, these wines had greenness, they had pyrazine, they tasted and they smelled like Cabernet Sauvignon. Very similar to what they smelled like in Bordeaux, but with a little bit more fruit. Now that people are looking for bigger, richer, more alcoholic wines, which typically get bigger scores, they're picking later and later. Sometimes people are picking even into mid-November sometimes, and some other people that might be making more traditional styles are picking 6 weeks before. And so literally letting these grapes hang in almost until they turn to raisins, and they're picking them with a potential alcohol of, you know, 18 or 19%, and then adding water and acid back to make these big, rich wines, you lose the varietal characteristic. And I think manipulation in the new world and people trying to make wines that nature is not making, they're making them in a laboratory with different concoctions. The truth is, there's a lot of tricks that are changing the truth of what the grape intended and what the earth intended. And so I think that's an issue, and that becomes a very difficult thing in blind tasting, that a Napa Cabernet will actually taste like an old vine Zinfandel because it has so many raisins that were, when they were picked, it has this raisinated characteristic. Or it can even taste like an Amarone. Like, I've been at a blind tasting before where we had a Napa Cabernet that everyone thought was an Amarone del Valpolicella because the wine had probably 17% alcohol and smelled like chocolate and dried black fruits and literally tasted like, you know, a wine made from dried grapes in the northeast of Italy. So it's a very difficult thing. Blind tasting is quite simple when there's very classic examples. And that's the most important thing. When you're bringing a wine or you're testing somebody on a varietal in a place, it has to be a classic and typical expression of place. For example, if you give me a Chardonnay from Hungary, for example, that's not a classic varietal grown in a classic place. So if you give it to 200 different master sommeliers, nobody's probably going to get it because we've probably never even had a Chardonnay from Hungary before, just for an example. So each wine, for example, Chablis, 100% Chardonnay from Chablis, you have Pinot Noir from Burgundy, you have Grenache from Chateau Neuf de Pape, you have Mauvais from Bandol, you have California Cabernet, Argentine Malbec. A lot of these things are classic expressions of place because of the way they're made, how much oak goes into the wine, you know, the soil type, the color, everything has to come together. And when you actually are taking a sommelier examination, you are going to get classic wines from classic places. And there's a lot of places in the world that make classic wines. So the test is not easy, but once you program your taste memory with classic examples and you sit down to the test, hopefully you will recognize the wines.
Well, that takes the pressure off. And actually, it's a really good point that if you're going to do this kind of blind tasting with your friends, don't throw in ringers. It's just... It just makes it too darn hard. Now, let's move on. We're talking...
It is fun. I mean, I don't think it's bad to throw in ringers occasionally just to have some fun. But if you're taking it seriously and trying to, like, educate yourself, try to pick classic wines from classic places. And if you don't know what they are, you can just go and do your local wine shop, and they should be able to help you out.
We're talking to Ian Cobble. You know him from the movie Psalm. And, Ian, I didn't think we saw your bad side. I was rooting for you the whole way. You didn't, by the way, pass that time around, but you came back and
did it again.
Did you consider not taking the test a second time? Or did you consider anything like suicide?
No,
or
no,
anything
no,
like
no,
that?
Absolutely not. I was in it till the end. There was no
question.
I would have I would be still taking it. Yeah, I mean, there's no retreating. You know, you're going in and you're going to get it, or you're going to come home and study for another year and go back. But it was a very intense 3 weeks of my life right before the second time, because I'd put so much pressure on myself to pass. And I had the potential to pass, and I was actually tasting the best of my life right before. I was literally nailing just about every wine I tasted in a blind tasting. And that was the part of the test that I ended up failing, because I didn't trust myself. And I ended up switching, you know, my wines at the very last second. I decided that it wasn't what I thought it was. And it was, if I would have left my answer, I would have passed.
You had a lot of media, though, that was breathing down your neck the second time around, I'm guessing.
You know, there's a lot of pressure. I mean, you're going in with between 30 and 60 other people who have been studying for years and years, and you know that only 3 to 6 or 7% of those people are going to pass. And, you know, when you show up with cameras behind you, it's just a little strange, to be honest, because most of the time you show up by yourself and you're in your own space studying. And when there's cameras around, there's no secrets. And they're in your hotel room and they're listening to all of our conversations with cameras on us. And it's definitely not as natural as it could be. And then they're taking that footage and distilling it down to the 5% that's going to be interesting to watch. So you're getting a very small snippet of what occurred over the 3 years. But I think they did a great job of actually making it interesting for the viewer.
I know you have to buzz, but I really want to bring people up to date on what you're doing, because you've created a web-based business that I think is the perfect thing for a guy like you. Talk about Psalm Select and the Psalm Blind 6 and Psalm Blind 12.
Okay, so this Psalm Select is basically an offer every day. We find small production wines around the world that you typically don't see on retail shelves. Every single day I find a wine I'm very passionate about. I find the very best pricing I can. We offer free shipping on roughly between $90 and $100 minimum order. So, you know, for example, today was a 3-pack of different great red burgundies. Yesterday was a unique white wine from the north of Italy, from, you know, Manzoni Bianco, made by Elisabetta Foridori. Every single day is a unique wine from a unique place. We talk about the people, the place, how it was made, the type of oak, the soil type, how all these influences come together, and we give you wine pairings at the end. So every single day, the price points vary from $15 to hundreds of dollars a bottle. Most of the time, most offers are typically $25 to $55 a bottle, because I think that's the sweet spot for a lot of the great wines in the world, and that's typically what I spend on wine. So the preface is, anything that I drink, we offer, and it's always delicious wines. Most of the time, 90% of the wines are typically organic or biodynamically farmed with no use of chemicals, which I think is very important for the life of the wine. To join, you basically just go to psalmselect.com, spelled S-O-M-M-S-E-L-E-C-T. On the very top, it says join for free. And so you click on there, you put your email, and every day you'll get an email from me basically geeking out about a place in the world and something that I'm passionate about, and giving you a chance to access wines you might not normally come across.
These are all wines that you love.
Yeah, absolutely. These are wines that I drink at home. These are wines that if you come over to my house for dinner, this is what I'll be serving. So it's a way for you to have, you know, vetted wine selections by a master sommelier, and we send to roughly 37 states now.
Awesome.
And it's free shipping at about $100 or more. So it's quite interesting. And just recently we launched a new Blind 6, which is a blind tasting 6-pack. It's $199 a month for 6 bottles. So it's roughly around $32, $33 a bottle. And we put really good wines in the Blind 6. And it's all wrapped in black paper, you know, with numbered 1 through 6. And so you can have dinner parties, or you can even be serious. Say you're studying for sommelier exams. You can actually take wine 1 out, have somebody blind taste you on it, come up with your final conclusion, and then pull out a piece of paper that describes all of the details about the wine, what the color is, how this, you know, relates to the aromas and the minerality, the acidity and the alcohol, and why you should have come up with the final conclusion. For example, Sancerre is a Sauvignon Blanc from chalky soils grown in the Loire Valley. What's unique about it? There's typically this kind of fresh herb characteristic. You get pyrazine, methoxypyrazine. It's always on Sauvignon Blanc 95% of the time. It's a smell of kind of like fresh bell pepper, or almost like diced green onion. Some people say jalapeno, depending on how ripe or underripe the wine is. And you also get this slight oyster shell-like minerality, high acid, no oak. So every single wine in the world has a way to get to the final conclusion. And we're trying to educate people at home. So that's the Blind 6. And if you go to psalmselect.com and just click on monthly memberships, you can read more about that. And then we have 2 clubs. Sometimes people are too busy to actually, you know, read every offer, because it takes 2 to 3 minutes of your day. And a lot of people are busy to open up the email and spend that time. So we have an automatic shipment. One is called the Psalm 6, which is 6 wines sent automatically to your home. 6 of my favorite wines from the previous month. And then the Psalm 12 is a full case. And so those are $199 a month for the Psalm 6 and $349 a month for the Psalm 12. The wines are roughly around $30 a bottle on average. So we're not selling crazily expensive. expensive wine, but not inexpensive wine. I think $30 is a nice sweet spot where you can get some amazing wines from all over the world. And the great thing is, if you do sign up for Somm Select, you have access to a daily education, and you don't have to buy anything, and you can just simply just get the daily education. If something looks interesting and a recipe looks interesting, you can buy a few bottles and cook that recipe for some friends and make a night out of it.
I think it's the second best idea to ever come to the wine world.
What was the first?
The invention of the corkscrew.
Okay, I like it.
Ian, it has been such a pleasure to have you on. Folks, do go over to SomSelect.com. I don't think there's any palate that you can trust better than Ian's. Ian, thanks for being on the show.
It's a pleasure to be here.
I really appreciate it, and I know you got to run. We'll be back with more Grape Encounters in just a moment, so don't go anyplace.
Grape Encounters is 100% estate-grown. We have, however, removed the pretentiousness and added a healthy dose of fun.
If you love wine, then you probably love to travel, too. And there are two places you should really visit soon. The best part is, you don't even have to pack a bag or leave your house. If you're looking for adventures in wine, log on to GrapeEncounters.com. There you'll find an audio library of more than 300 stories that will take you virtually anywhere you want to go. At GrapeEncounters.com, you'll find short subjects as well as full stories. All audio can be downloaded with one click, and you'll be amazed at the broad range of subject matter. Another place you really should visit is our Facebook group page. Simply search for Grape Encounters Radio or click on the link on our website. The Grape Encounters Radio group has become a formidable place for wine lovers to exchange ideas, introduce products, and share upcoming events. If you're not already a group member, then join the party on Facebook. Grape Encounters is more than a radio broadcast. It's a family of like-minded, fun-loving, unpretentious wine lovers. Come fill up your glass today.
She's earthy, honest, and sipping each week as a service to you. From Sunset Magazine, it's Sarah Schneider. This is Sipping with Sarah on Grape Encounters Radio.
I've got an $8 bottle of wine. Picked it up on sale in the checkout line. Oh, it looked pretty good to me. Made somewhere in California. For that price, honey, how bad could it be?
Right about now is a very good time to head to wine country because the harvest is, for all intents and purposes, over. And the fury that's been going on in all the wine countries has died down. Wouldn't you agree, Sarah, this is a great time? Fall's beautiful there.
Oh, I think no matter where you are in wine country, and it varies so widely in this country, but the harvest is in, there are still generally fermentations going on. So there's something happening in the wineries.
The mad dash is over, and the hordes of tourists that go prior to and during crush are gone now, and it's just a good time. You'll get the attention of the winemaker oftentimes in the tasting room, and you'll get a much better personal touch.
I agree, yeah.
So the question of the day, Sarah Schneider, is this. You have to drink a lot of wine for your profession. I have to do the same thing.
I'll bet you do.
So how do you navigate A, wine country, and B, even harder, big wine festivals and events?
Those are two really good questions.
It's kind of the same question, but I think it's the toughest question I've ever asked you, because I went to an event, I mentioned it a couple of weeks ago, had 200 to 300 wineries there. I walked in, I was dizzy. I looked around, I wandered. I didn't even attempt to go up one aisle and down the next. They were displaying their medals, and I just chose the place based upon the medal.
That is really funny. That's one approach. I think that'd be really practical.
Yeah.
There's several ways to do it. My own personal confession is that I follow the long lines. If there's a booth that has a huge line in front of it, that's probably something that has gotten buzz about it. But then I don't even want to.
They're giving
be
away
there.
Shrimp cocktail at that booth.
That could be. But I actually only find a big tasting useful if I've done a lot of homework ahead of time, if I know actually who's going to be pouring there, and then do some research on what the word is about their wines on the street.
Okay, I totally disagree with the long line theory. And I don't ever like to talk down on anybody.
Sure.
But the longest line at the tasting that I was talking about earlier was for a very commercial brand.
Interesting.
With a celebrity attachment.
Okay.
And there are several of those, and their wines are terrible, in my opinion. Absolutely dreadful, undrinkable to me. And they bring a high price, and, you know, when we get off the air, you're going to guess who it is, right?
I'm going to try,
You got some ideas in your mind already?
I do.
You do? Okay, yeah. Good.
Not on air.
I can't wait. Yeah, no, we're not going to do it on the air. But I think, yeah, some of the lines may be because the wines are really good. Some could be because they have a very handsome or a very attractive pourer. That happens too.
You're absolutely right. And I'll poke holes in my own theory at this point. There can be a lot of buzz about certain wines that is really not for the quality of the wines. It's for all sorts of other reasons. And so maybe don't trust the general population. You have to find what you like yourself.
Yeah. By the way, the lady who is in front of me at the Wilson Winery wine tasting, okay? And I love Wilson's wines,
mm-hmm.
okay? We're not related, but I am going to see if someday I am an heir to that kingdom.
You should check it out.
But
I'm sure.
The lady who is in front of me, and you know who you are, why did you sit there and talk for so long when there were 20 people behind us?
Ah, there's another big tasting
phenomenon.
I want
to just take my shoe off and hit you.
Ooh.
Okay. I'm sorry. Okay.
Harsh words.
Yeah. So let's answer the question before we go. How do we navigate that? And how do you navigate wine country? Because it's going to make or break your trip.
So I think you have to know a little bit about the region you're headed toward, because some regions are quite homogenous in their quality and their style of wine and the kind of wine that's in their bottles. I really think you need to do your homework ahead of time. I get people asking me, okay, I'm going to be in Napa on Saturday, and what 6 wineries should I visit? And my first response wants to be, don't do it. 6 wineries in one afternoon in Napa, unless you're spitting and really being geeky about it, will not do you any good whatsoever.
That's absolutely true. The best I think you can really expect to do is 4.
That's pushing it.
That's pushing it. And it didn't used to be that way, by the way, but it is that way now because every winery has added attractions that are geared to keep you there.
That's true.
They want you to buy a bottle of wine and go out in their picnic ground and drink the wine.
I actually think that's a really good thing.
It's fantastic.
That you're not just marching from tasting room to tasting room. It should be an experience.
But it is why when you take that wine home, it doesn't taste as good as it did in that environment that has been carefully cultured to create the ultimate environment to, you know, enjoy that wine in.
That is so true. Context is so much of our response to wine. And I know that when I'm out at a winery in the place it was grown, and especially if the winemaker's there, I often love a wine. And then I get it home and I think, that's not quite as good as I thought. It was all about the place, the people.
I'm going to be writing a book about this soon.
Okay.
Because I've talked about this so many times. The ambiance is everything. And really good wine people know how to deal with everything from the music to the lighting to the ambiance and colors in the room and all of these things. In fact, it's a business you and I should start.
There you go.
Because you can make a wine taste 10 times better in a tasting room just by adjusting all these atmospheric elements. But I want to tell you my criteria for choosing the places that you're going to go wine tasting at.
Okay.
Okay.
I'm all ears.
So first, go online, whatever wine country you're going to, and Google the following. Most spectacular wineries in fill in the blank. Okay. That's the first thing you're going to do. Then Google best wines from fill in the blank wine country. And then look at the two lists that you made and see which ones are on both. Because for wine country, it isn't just about the wine. It is also about the spectacle. And there's some wonderful spectacle out there now. And they've built some amazing wineries that have amazing features. So I say, go to the wineries that are going to just delight you with their ambiance and excite you with their wines.
I think that's a great plan. Yes, yes to that. But I would add a couple of things to that. The Sarah plan is to contact friends in the area and say, what's new? Because I need to find out what's new. But I would say also, decide what sources you start developing trust in. And the sources of information that tend to be on the cusp let you know what is new coming along the pike, both spectacular and quality of wine. But I would also say, once in a while, there's just this find in a hole in the wall, almost a garage.
That's true.
And if you develop sources that keep up on those things, that you will also find those little cubby holes where there's some great discoveries that you wouldn't even find in the marketplace yet.
Okay. I agree with that completely. Now, very quickly, what about wine tastings where there are 100 or 200 wineries represented there? How do you navigate that? I think you need to get the book of the wineries. The list of the wineries will be on the website for that event.
I agree completely.
And you need to study it and don't deviate.
I completely agree, because you have to have a strategy going in. You can't just randomly circulate and expect to drop in on the best wines if you're trying to find some.
So let's get off the air. There's probably one going on someplace. You have an expense account, right?
A bit of one.
Okay, let's find us a festival someplace in the world and let's fly there.
I'm with you.
That's not going to happen. Anyway, all right, that's going to do it for Grape Encounters today. Sarah, see you next week.
I'll be here.
Okay, bye-bye.
You never know what part of the country or the world the Grape Encounters microphones will take you to. Don't miss a single experience. Your Grape Encounter isn't over. We're just taking a breather until next week's edition.